Turn with me to Genesis chapter 41. God being able, we'll start in chapter number 41. This is a time when, of course, Joseph has been chosen and set in his place where God had ordained him to be. Evil had been wrought against him, his brothers, his own flesh and blood brothers, who had were jealous, extremely jealous of him and hated him because of the convictions of their own heart. And they had him sold into the hands of some Ishmaelites, Midianites, going down into Egypt, a caravan, sold into the hands of a person down there, Potiphar, and been faithful for quite a while. And then, of course, had a whore for a wife. She rose up and lied against him, said he tried to rape her, and they had him put into prison. So he'll continue to be faithful to just a young man. And there, of course, two came down from the Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, his butler, and his person who was his baker. And they both were put into prison and had dreams, and of course God gave him the interpretation of the dreams, and they both were fulfilled. One got back to his seat, the where he was placed in service. The other, of course, was beheaded, and the birds came and eat his flesh when they hang him on a tree, and of course he died. And then it was two full years later, he said, "Now remember me, when you get back and you're restored to your position, your place of power to minister before the king, don't forget me." Well, he did. And two full years had come to pass when he was, of course, this thing happened, this dream that God gave unto Pharaoh. And he had two dreams, as a matter of fact. The second dream, he said, what's confirmed this thing was from God. Sometimes you have dreams, you wake up, you don't remember what they were. You just know you had them. Sometimes, a few times you can wake up and they're very forceful to your mind. So these stuck with him. He couldn't get over them. He couldn't get past them. They were so strong in his mind that it troubled him. And he was troubled about the dreams that he'd had. Of course, he was so troubled he called his magicians, his soothsayers, his astrologers, all these that Norman were around, the men of when they had great kingdoms and great powers, and set over a lot of peoples and nationalities and tongues. They had, of course, pulled from different nations, men that like they did during the time of the Babylonian captivity. Other times of captivity, they bought the smartest, the wisest, those that could benefit their kingdoms, who had great understanding over worldly affairs or anything of that nature. They had an extra sense of awareness about things that went on. So he had them like that. He called his people, his council, run about him, and demanded them that they might be able to interpret the dream. Now, they couldn't do that because they were men of the flesh. They weren't of God, but God had a man that he favored. He put in that seat where that he was at to bring him up and to let him sit in the seat of authority and to rule over all of Egypt, except only under the hand of the Pharaoh himself. Everything that went on, he was in charge of it. But at a time of suffering, a time of trial, a time of tribulation, if you can't be faithful through the thick and the thin, through the time of testing and trying, tribulation, things don't always go right. They won't in this life. But old Jacob said, Balaam said, "How old are you?" He said, "I'm a certain age, 130, I think," he said, "and for my days are few and full of evil." And we all have problems in this flesh. Everybody that lives in the flesh is going to have a certain amount of problems that we encounter, that we face, and things that we endure. But we need to learn to trust in the Lord with all our heart and lean not to our own understanding, all the ways, acknowledge Him. But as the Lord, He does direct our paths. He remained faithful. God rested for His faithfulness. Now, He would have never obtained where God wanted Him to be if He had not been faithful. He never turned His back on the will of God. No matter what He endured, what He encountered, and these men, He could have whined and pouted and said, "Why?" I asked Him, "God, why didn't You cause Him to be mindful about me down here in this stinking place?" He didn't say that. He kept right on laboring, knowing that God was still in charge, and the Lord was sure to bring things to pass, which He did. So, two full years, it said, if you look at chapter 41, verse 1, at the end of two full years, that Pharaoh dreamed, behold, he stood by the river, and behold, there came up out of the river seven well-favored kine. The kine, of course, is cows, fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. These were sold, of course, like the prime beef, you would call them. In our days, they were the best that could be, of course, offered up or bought or sought out or found. These were well-favored. They were in good shape and fat, and of course, they were very productive. These were, of course, the best that there was be offered. They were, he said, well favored and fat flesh. And they fed in a meadow. Those seven other kind of cows came up after them out of the river, ill favored and lean flesh, and stood by the other kind upon the brink of the edge of the river. They stood by them, and ill favored and the ill favored and lean flesh kind did eat up the seven well favored and fat kind. So Pharaoh awoke. And this was his first dream that he had. And those that were ill favored, those that were so abominable, that all he could see was, as I said before, if you ever seen, and I've seen them, a few of them, out, of course, and of course, you got to be somewhere around farmland or cattle. But I was out, and I have seen cows that were so skinny that you could see their backbone, their bones, their hip bones, and that's all you could see. You'd skin over them, they were so skinny, their ribs were sticking out. Of course, that was a real bad thing. Not too many of them, but I've seen a few of them, and I remember how pitiful that they looked. And so these were even worse than that. These weren't a thing in the world, but just skin and bone. I mean, that's all they were. They were just a structure walking around. And so he said, when these ill flavored ones came up, of course, they devoured those that were before them, that is the fat flesh, those that were the choice ones that came up first. They devoured all of them, which meant that the prosperity came in the first 7 years. In the second 7 years, when it was all said and done, they would consume all the good that came out of the first 7 years. It was going to be a bad, awful time, probably like they had never experienced before in all the land of Egypt. He slept and dreamed the second time. The gold 7 ears of corn came upon one stalk, rank and good. It was high in rank, or that is, it was full and good and filled out. It was tremendous. And what had happened there, it was something that was very good. 7 ears, 7 ears of corn came up on one stalk. Just seven beautiful ears, and it was fulfilled, as full as could be. Seven being not God's number of completion. And this signified a certain amount here, that 7 ears on this one stalk of corn. Very, very good. And the old seven thin ears, and blasted with the east wind, broke up back to them. The seven thin ears devoured the seven rank and full ears. Pharaoh woke, and behold, it was a dream. Came to pass in the morning, his spirit was troubled. He sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt, all the wise men thereof. Pharaoh told him his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my fault this day. God brought it to his mind, so I remember my fault or my sin this day. That's a young man down in slavery, down in jail. Of course, I remember what happened on my behalf. Pharaoh's wroth with his servants and put him in ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. Said, both of us, we were put down in the prison, and we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he. We dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. There was there with us a young man, a Hebrew, servant to the captain of the guard, and we told him, and he interpreted us our dreams. And each man according to his dream he did interpret. Came to pass, he interpreted to us, so it was. Me he restored to my office, and him he hanged. And Pharaoh said, of course it makes me wonder, but I know it's just the way that it's worded. He said, him he hanged. And he's talking, of course, to Pharaoh here, and he said, him meaning another Pharaoh, possibility of another Pharaoh. But I don't much think that it was. I think it's just wording this as such, because it only been a short time since they were brought up out of prison. He said, him he hanged. Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon. He shaved himself and changed his raiment and came in unto Pharaoh. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there's none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, it is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace. And I'm not able to do that, no matter what you heard. I don't have that ability. It's not in me. I don't have any type of ability to interpret a man's thoughts or dreams, he said, but God does. God giveth Pharaoh an answer of peace, an answer to, of course, the dream that you had, and give you peace over it. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, in my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river. Behold, there came up out of the river seven kind, fat flesh and well favored, and they fed in the meadow. Those seven other kind came up back to them, poor and were ill favored, and lean flesh, such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for baldness. He said it was so naked, so it was so scrawny, so pitiful and pathetic. I've never seen anything like what I saw in this dream. And the lean and the ill, favorite kind, it eat the first seven kind. When they'd eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them, because they, but they were still ill-favored as at the beginning. So I woke. He said they were so ill-favored, so pitiful and pathetic, even when they consumed the ones that were before them, you couldn't see any difference. They were still the same way. And I saw, of course, left in destitute. And I saw in my dream, and behold, 7 ears came up in one stalk, full and good. Those 7 ears withered thin and blasted with the east winds, brought up back to them. And the thin ears devoured the 7 good ears. And I told this unto the magician, but there was none that could declare it to me. And Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God has showed Pharaoh what is about to do, what he's about to do. The 7 good kind are 7 years, and the 7 good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the 7 thin and the ill-favored kind that came up after them are 7 years. The 7 empty ears, blasted with the east wind, shall be 7 years of famine. This is the thing which I have spoken to Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt. And there shall arise after them 7 years of famine. All the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt. And the famine shall consume the land. He said it's going to be forgotten, all the good ones. It's going to be consumed by all the bad ones. And that's what he was talking about when they remained the same after those ill flavors had come up and consumed that was good before them. And the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of that famine fallen, but shall be very grievous. For that the dream was double and the Pharaoh twice. It is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. He caused his dream at 2 times to confirm it, that this dream was something that the Lord was about to bring to pass concerning the land of Egypt and all those lands that were there, of course, in the region there around about, even back to the land of Canaan. We know that by the famine of Dareth. It's called the famine of Dareth itself. Same thing in the land of Canaan. They had to send down after a while because what they had had run out for food, for survival. And of course, we'll read about as we get over that, how the sons of Jacob and his boys had to go down, and eventually all his father's house was brought down in the land of Egypt for their survival. And of course, they went down there, tarried there, stayed down there for 430 long years. And of course, many things transpired and took place in those years. Those sons of Jacob had died out, and their descendants had, of course, continued on and lived there, grew up. We find out, of course, we get into the time of the Exodus, the man Moses, the meekest man of all the face of the earth, he was of the sons of Levi. We'll talk about that as well when we get over that flood over. But anyhow, they were down there, and all was brought down before it was all said and done, the will of God, that they might survive the famine of death, and of course, that God might raise up him a mighty nation out of the promise he made unto Abraham, unto his seed, and they became a great mighty nation. Millions of people were up there, down there, and God delivered them out by the mighty and an outstretched arm. This is what God had foresaw and purposed to be, that he might magnify his name upon all the face of the earth, and all the people might know who the true and the living God was. He brought these things up, these things to be, that they might know about his glory, about his power. All the world knew about it when, of course, he plagued Pharaoh with 10 plagues and drowned him in the Red Sea. He brought the children of Israel on dry ground. All that he done for them in the wilderness, all these things was manifested and talked about. That's how Rahab the harlot knew about it. That's how she believed. She believed what she heard. She knew what this was, a god of all the earth. She was sick of her whorish ways and being a harlot and a whore. And that didn't ever satisfy her. But of course, she sought the God of these Israelites and hid the spies, and God spared her and all of her household. And by that scarlet thread of rope, she let them all down. They got out. And then Joshua marched around the city 7 times. The 7th time, of course, 7 times, blowed the trumpets, and the walls of sin fell down, and all those folk were slain, except those that few that harlot, that whore in her family. And she lived at the Bible as in Israel, even on this day. God always does things well and right. Never needs a second. But he, of course, gave Pharaoh his dream that he might be the one who would be bringing the power and the seat of authority. This young Hebrew man who had interpreted, God had given him interpretation of the dream, bringing him the seed of authority, might preserve seed and life of his people, as well as multitudes of folks everywhere else as well. God provided through him. He was obedient. If you expect to help win anybody or lead anybody to the Lord Jesus, you got to practice what you preach and be faithful through the thick and through the thin. No matter what's going good physically, or that is mentally, or whatever it may be, then you need to buckle up, straighten up, and just do the best you can. Leave the rest to the Lord, and I promise you, you'll surely bring it to pass. All things work together for good, them to love God, them to call according to his purpose. And if we had it all easy, a bed of roses down here, we wouldn't know how to appreciate heaven. But everything is good, and we trust him, because God gets the glory, we get the good out of it. Look in there now, he said to him, it's a dream you've had, and God gave it twice to confirm it, this thing that it's going to come to pass, and you need to do something about it. And of course, he said, you need to find somebody. Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this? Is a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house. According to thy word, shall all my people be ruled on the throne. I'll be great now. He said, you're going to be over everything and everybody. Nobody's going to buck you. I'll guarantee they're not. Here's my ring. He took that ring. The ring is a sign of the symbol of government. It makes things certain and for sure. That's reading in time of old when those kings sealed that with their rings. That's why he gave old wicked Haman that ring by mistake. And he got that back and gave it to Mordecai, who was more faithful, who, of course, told about those who were going to kill that king. Hadn't been rewarded. God let that be. He didn't find out until later. So when he came up for occasion, that he'd here give this man reward, and that choked old Mordecai to death because he had to bow down before him. And that's another thought that God brought up in my mind to share that with you. But that ring always is a marriage. It seals the sign of the covenant. When you put that ring on, that's between two becoming one. Something's been said, and you're not to break that covenant by any means whatsoever, except by death do you part. And so he gave him his ring. He gave him a gold necklace. He put some clothes on him. And declared him to be over all Egypt. Said, I don't want nobody bucking this man. I don't want nobody to say no to this man. He is my authority, and you'll do as he said. Of course, he put him up, and he set him in the seat of authority. Thou shalt be over my house. According to my words, all my people be ruled on the throne. I'll be greater than thou. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I set thee over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand, put upon Joseph's hand, arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. He made him to ride in the second chariot, which he had, and they cried before him, bound the knee, and he made him ruler all the land. And I said, I wonder if he went by this Potiphar and went by his house and that old whore he had for a wife, and I promise you they had to bow down before him if he did. I don't know if he throwed it up in their face, but it might have been God wanting to ride by or go by them, and they had to bow their nasty knee before him. And I'm sure it just eat her up. And of course, this man, he might even confront him and have to wait to have some say so. Then I want you to know I can have power now to kill you, but I'm not. You've got a nasty woman, a whore for a wife, and I never touched on a desire to touch her. You better check up on her. She may be running around with some of the men in the house. If she wanted me, she wanted somebody else. She's not satisfied with you. I don't know that he'd done that, but he could have to straighten out and talk to her, talk to him about what a tramp he had for a wife. But anyhow, just neither here nor there. I don't know. It's not in there. That's just food for thought. There's a possibility that he could. She needed to be straightened out. Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee no man shall lift thy hand or foot in the land of all Egypt. Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paaneah, and he gave him to wife as Enath, the daughter of Potipharah, the priest of On. Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt. This was also, if you notice here, this, of course, wife that this Pharaoh gave him was the daughter of a priest. Now, these priests, they, of course, they were heathen priests, and Joseph didn't believe like they believe, and I believe he converted his wife. I believe that because he was a godly man. I don't know when or where, but I believe that he did. And also his boys also got converted too. He lived a life in front of them, practiced what he preached, and in their own time, they were converted. Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. They let you know how old he was. And when he was 17, how many years he stood in chains. He stood as a prisoner, and it wasn't a pretty thing. He suffered all those years. It talks about in this book of Psalms about the time his word came. They bound him. He had the marks of the chain on his ankles and probably on his arms. He had that, wore that for all 13 long years. He bore that. God put him up in the place he purposed and permitted that thing to happen to him. They bring him in that seat of authority. And then he was 30 years old. And he come in, of course, to be the second power. Of course, he was really the first power because the power of God on him. He ruled over all the land of Egypt. And of course, even Pharaoh, of course, done as Joseph bid him to do because he's seen the true living God in him, the spirit of the living God in him. In the seven plenteous years, the earth brought forth by handfuls. He gathered up all the food of the 7 years, which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up up the food in the cities, the food of the field, which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. All the cities throughout of Egypt, and they were quite a few of them, every city He made storehouses. He laid up. Everything was prosperous. Everything, all the land, that was a fertile land in him. Down through there, down the river Nile, that was a real crescent, a great place for growing and farming and things of that nature. And so all the land of Egypt at that time had the rains and had everything they needed to produce in abundance. God blessed it to be so. And for 7 long years, and so they built storehouses where they could put up the grain. Farmers of old used to have bins that they put them in. I guess some of them still do in some of our corn growing areas. They have these places where they pile the corn in once they harvest that. And I see Mr. Rivers and them, they didn't have a place to put it, but I seen Hyatt harvest it. He put on the little trucks and they paid him when he was alive. He was on the government plan where you grow 1 year, you don't grow the next year. And that's so that you don't have too much at one time and the bottom go out. Farmers be discouraged not getting nothing for their crop. So that's a good thing. And also to let the land lay for a while. That's why God said 6 years, 7th year, let the land lay. And you act a while, it would be, of course, break all out of the nutrients out of the ground. And of course, they wouldn't be able to bear. So let it lay a little while and eat off that 6th year of the 7th year. And the 8th year, you go and sow again. There was purpose for all these different things. That's that the land might reproduce a little bit its fertility. I'm using some good word. God bring my mind. It's not my vocabulary, but he's giving it, so I'll share it. That's above my means, and that ain't so big anyhow, but it is in there and proper because God gave it. But that's why it's all about what he was talking about here. When he says these things, you read that in the Bible, you can find out that's the reasons for it. Everything God gave, there was a good reason, like diets for food, the dietary laws, they weren't given to say, but that people might learn how to eat, what not to eat, what's good for health, what's not good for health. We have dietitians today, nowadays, if they give you some good advice, and if they diagnose you, took your blood sample, everything to you, they look at you and see you look like you're anemic, you look like you're terribly overweight, you look like they say, well, they recommend something for you to carry out and to do. If you got any good sense, why do you go to them? If you don't know what to say, you might as well stay at home, live with them, and die. If they're good physicians or dietitians, and they make a recommendation, for God's sake, stand by and do what you're supposed to do. That's what their doctors are, a good thing. A good medicine is a good thing. I'm not opposed to medicine and doctors. If you need them, God can help you. Go get them. Go use them. That's between you and the Lord. God bless you. Go ahead and help yourself. But they're a good thing. They're good. They're bad doctors. There's bad medicine. It said in Mary Hart, like a good medicine. So there's medicines that are good. Not for it, but in him. God gives you the laws and precepts and statutes and judgments, all these things for teach people how they ought to live. Our laws of our land here in America is constituted and originated from the law of Moses, the law of God. If thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal. All those laws that we have are fundamentally came from, that, of course, our Constitution comes from the Word of God. It's founded on that. All these other things that we have that were established are good things in the beginning. We're good law. Now that Congress up there, Congress means both bodies. That means not the judiciary, but that means the legislative, and the House of Representatives means Congress. Both of those up there, they legislate some laws that are really unconstitutional. That's vile. That's garbage. It ain't a thing worth but trash. And so through what they've done, they've defiled our country and everything else, and they've pushed God out of it. We're headed down for a downfall of the nation. If it gets God, it's going to be turned into hell. So America's going to go out one day. I'm getting out before that takes place, and then hell will break loose. But anyhow, God gave everything, gives everything for purpose and reason. We just need to find out what it is and why it is that we're reading or partaking or seeing or doing the things that we're doing to see that we're doing the right thing. In 7 plenteous years, and they brought forth handful, they put up the cities and the places of storage bins. They might store this stuff and regulate it. Of course, they put guards and people over that to take care of it, watch over it. Nobody's going to break into it and steal it. And this man had great sense God gave him, and so he done everything well. Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea very much until he left number. He got it so high he couldn't count no more, couldn't keep up with it, for it was without number. And Joseph were born 2 sons before the year of the famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipherah, a priest of On, bare unto him. Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, he hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. He was comforted over the firstborn Manasseh, and that's why he named it. Evidently, Manasseh means comforted, and in some respect, over all his toils and all the things that he suffered. Name the second called he Ephraim, for God hath called me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. Evidently, Ephraim means fruitful, and so he became fruitful, that is, in the land of his affliction, God raised him up. And the 7 years of plenteous that was in the land of Egypt were ended. 7 years of death or famine began to come. according to Joseph said, and the death was in all lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread, that is corn, that is what they had raised. But all the land and not corn as we know it. Corn then was called probably wheat, rye, barley, and oats, and those kind of things. I think that they call that corn, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the scripture. It wasn't corn like we eat corn, that is, corn on the cob. It wasn't the same type of corn, but they had it just then at that time that they raised was called corn. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to Pharaoh for bread. Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he said to you, do. Famine was over all the face of the earth. Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold them to the Egyptians. The famine was waxed sore in the land of Egypt. All the countries came in Egypt to Joseph for to buy corn because of the famine was sore in all the land. Now let me say here, I don't believe that the earth had spread out too much in population at that time. It hadn't been too terribly long before that time when we had down to eight people. Now from the eight people we had the three sons of Noah. They spread out to the first of all the Gentiles. That was Japheth. And of course Shem was over where Abraham come from in that land and different places over that area. And of course all the way back up to close to the Jordan. And then up down the Jordan and Egypt. Now in that area we had Ham had to send the land of Canaan. So they were spread out. So it wasn't at that time too heavily populated over the rest of the earth at that time. Remember, they were still replenishing. They hadn't got, I don't believe, any existence at all so far as crossing over the oceans into other places of habitat later on which they come down through the years and the times in which they come over. I don't know when, but I know they did because they were here. The Indians come somewhere, somehow, across probably the northern portion and come across as others did later at times. And then people came from different places. We know we got history about some down in what we call in Central America. Those places down there, they were stowaway slaves and they jumped off the ships, took over ships and went down to those islands down in there. We have others that come. We got history about the French coming over, the Spanish coming over, all these others, and the Indians were all over already over here. So we had those different types of people. They brought the Spanish people. They brought in, of course, the Catholic thoughts and ways of living down that area. So you can read history books. So we pay a little bit of attention. I didn't pay much. God knows I don't know how I remember that, but it must have stuck in there somehow. I remember a little bit of that, and God kept it and gave it to me, so I'd have a little sense about what I'm saying today. Of course, I need a lot of sense and a lot of understanding. I don't have too much of it, but He gave me what little I got, and I surely appreciate it. I need it. But anyway, if you look in here, you'll see, went over all the earth, and He said the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold Egyptian. The famine was waxed sore in the land of Egypt. All the countries came to Egypt to Joseph to buy corn, because that the famine was sore in all the lands. Of course, you'll see at this time, and I won't get into it. I was going to get on into that, and of course, I think I will. Let me get a little bit further. And when Jacob saw that there was corn in Egypt, Jacob said to his sons, why do you look one for another? He said, what in the world? What are you doing sitting around the stews to do nothing? You've heard like me, there's corn in Egypt. We've got to go down. We've got to do something. We're going to live. We're going to survive this famine, starvation. You know, we don't have anything, and it's not good. Here we've had 2 years of this. We got to go down. We got to carry a little money down there. We got to do some trade. I want to go down there and buy sufficient for us that we might survive and not die. I've heard there's corn in Egypt. Get you down thither and buy it for us from thence that we may live and not die. Joseph's 10 brethren went down to buy corn in Egypt. Now, he wouldn't let Benjamin go. That was his youngest son from the woman that he loved all with all his heart. And he really loved her. And of course, he was good for the maidens of these two girls of Leah. He didn't mistreat her, but he just didn't. And she knew that. She sensed that. She was satisfied. In time, he'd come over. And of course, he would come with her, spend the night with her. And she bore him some sons. And he was happy about that. But God's ordained two to be one. But his real love was Rachel. That's why he favored Joseph and Benjamin. That's why that he loved them, the children of his old age. Not that he loved his other boys, but he loved her so greatly. This was her in them. And he's seen that. He sensed that. Of course, he's seen something spectacular, I'll put it in that sense, real good about, and I want y'all to pay attention. Don't let your mind drift. It's a disturbance when the eyes roll like, I don't know, the devil working on you trying to search out what I'm saying. So just pay attention. Listen, you can probably learn something if you want to. I'm still learning myself, and I'm trying to share it with you. But anyhow, listen. Joseph's 10 brothers went down, but Benjamin didn't. And so Joseph's brother, Benjamin's Joseph's brother, Jacob sat not with his brethren, for he said, best be adventure, mischief befall him. He thought Joseph was dead. He thought what they brought back is coat of many colors, and they put, of course, an animal's blood on it. And he said he's been torn apart, something got him, y'all found it somewhere in the wilderness. God help him, I wish I'd never seen him to see about how y'all were doing. But he did, and so he grieved, and he hadn't got over that. He was still grieving about his son somewhat. And the son of Israel came to buy corn among those that came. The famine was in the land of Canaan, and Joseph was the governor of the land. And he it was that sold all to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before the face of it. Now remember what he said? You're going to come. I seen two sheep. My sheep rose up. Your sheep bowed down before me. That's another thing. It set the teeth on edge. It was already him. It was about him. Because they seen him different. He was different than they were. He was saved. He believed what his father told him about the God of all the earth. He accepted that, and he was a proper child like Moses was, but his brothers weren't saved. And because of the conviction of their own heart, of their own sinful living, they hated him. But when he said that, boy, that gave place to the devil. They hated him even more. Oh, yeah, we're going to bow down before you. Yeah, that's right. We'll fix you up. You dream of you. We'll deal with you in time to come. So they found out a cave, and they sold him into Egyptian bondage. Now, he said that but Joseph was governor of all the land. It was even so the people of the land and Joseph's brethren came about himself before him the face of the earth. Joseph saw his brethren and knew them, but he made himself strange to them and spake roughly unto them. He said unto them, whence come ye? And they said, from the land of Canaan to buy food. Now he spoke to them by an interpreter. He didn't speak. He could speak Hebrew, but he didn't speak by Hebrew. He spoke to let the interpreter speak to them like he didn't understand them. He didn't recognize them. He didn't know who they were. He was going to do a few things for them and to them, get their attention and work things out. And he wanted to teach them a little bit of a lesson, which he did, too. He put some fear in them. I mean, they got a little, just a tiny taste of what he endured, especially old Reuben. They put chains on him. When they left him behind, he kept him there. Of course, he chained him up. And when they came back, then he put a little more terror in them in a good way. It done them some good. All of humility about them. Of course, they humbled themselves. We read about that. Saw it, brother knew him, and they come to buy food. And Joseph, of course, Joseph knew his brother. They didn't know him. Joseph remembered the dream, which he dreamed to them and said to them, you are spies. You see the neck of the land, you come. Said, you come. You've been sent by a bunch of people down here to spy this land. And you come to see what you can do and what you can get. You can overtake us that you're a bunch of spies. I said, no, my lord, but to buy food. Are thy servants come? We're all one man's son. We're true men. Thy servants are no spies. He said unto them, nay, but you see the neck of the land, you come. They said, the servants are 12 brethren. The son, he portioned them to that. He wanted to see how his daddy was doing. He wanted to know about his younger brother. He wanted to know about how things were going. So he was putting them in that place to where he'd make them come out and tell who they were. I mean, it was in their family. What was going on? He was very cunning, very smart. God gave him great wisdom. And he didn't come to just pick it, but God gave it, and he wanted to know about them. So they were put in a position. That's why his father said, why didn't you tell him all that? He said, we couldn't help it the way he asked us. We had to tell him who we were and what he asked us. He accused of being spies. And so Jacob had something to say about that. Joseph said to them, this is your spies. Hereby you shall be proved. By the life of Pharaoh, you shall not go from hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you. Let him fetch your brothers, and I'm keeping all of you. You just send one back, and you'll be kept in prison, but your word may be proved, whether you be in truth, or else be in the life of Pharaoh, surely you are spies. He put them all together in one and more 3 days, and give them time to think about it. That's what he was doing. And Joseph said unto them the third day, let's do and live, for I fear God. He said, well, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm just going to keep one of you. I'll send the rest of you back. And I want you to prove out exactly what you told me to be so. I want to see that young brother. Don't you come back expecting anything. Don't you expect to get your brother back. You bring back that young brother. I'm going to see. If you got a young brother, I want to see it. You're going to prove it. Then I'll know you're not spies. If you be true men, let one of your brothers be bound in the house of the prison. Go you carry corn to the family houses. He wanted to send them back. He knew they needed food, and he wasn't about to let that happen where he wouldn't get it. He just put it in a place where he was bringing them, forcing his hand to bring his young brother to see him, also his dad. Bring your youngest brother to me, so shall your word be verified. You shall not die. And they did so. Said one another, we are very guilty concerning our brother, and that we saw the angels of his soul when he saw us, and we would not hear. Therefore, this dread come upon us. And Reuben answered, saying, spake I not unto you, saying, do not sin against the child, and you would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And then you not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. He broke his heart. He turned himself about them and wept and returned to them again. He had to leave. Went in another room, and he broke down and communed with them and took with them Simeon and bound him before their eyes. Now, Simeon, he took him in there and bound him up. Then Joseph commanded the field their sack with corn and restore every man's money in his sack to give them provision for the way, and thus did he unto them. And they laid at their ass with corn and departed thence, and as one of them opened his sack to give him his ass provender, and to him he espied his money. Behold, it was in his sack's mouth. He said to his brethren, my money is restored, and lo, it's even in my sack. And their heart failed them, and they were afraid, said one another, what is this that God had done unto us? And they came unto Jacob, their father of the land of Canaan, and told him all that they had failed of them, saying, the man which lord of the land spake roughly to us, and took us as spies of the country. We said unto him, we're true men, we're no spies. We be 12 brethren, sons of our father, and one is not. And the youngest is this day at our father in the land of Canaan. The man of the lord of the country said unto us, hereby shall I know that you're true men. Leave one of your brethren here with me, and take food for the famine of your household, and be gone. And bring your youngest brother to me. Then shall I know that you're no spies, but that you're true men. So will I leave you, your brother, and you shall traffic in the land. And it came to pass that they emptied their sack, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in the sack. And when they both and their father saw the bundle of money, they were afraid. Jacob, their father, said to them, Me have you bereaved of my children. Joseph is not, and Simeon is not, and will you take Benjamin away? All these things are against me. And Reuben spake unto his father, saying, slay my two sons, if I bring him not to thee. Deliver him into my hand, and I will bring him to thee again. And he said, my son shall not go down with you, but his brother is dead, he is left alone, his mischief befall. If mischief befall him by the way in the which you go, then shall you bring my gray hairs with sorrow to the ground. I said, I couldn't stand it, I'd die, I'd have a heart attack if I lost him. And the famine was sore in the land, and it came to pass, when he had eaten up the corn which he had brought out of Egypt, the father said unto them, go again to buy us a little food. And Judah spake unto him, saying, the man did solemnly protest unto us, saying, you shall not see my face, except your brother be with you. If thou wilt send our brother with us, we'll go and buy thee food. But if thou wilt not send him, we'll not go down. For the man said unto us, you shall not see my face either, except your brother be with you. And Israel said, wherefore did you so ill with me, as to tell the man whether you had yet a brother? Why did you tell him that? And they said, the man asked us straightly for our state, of our kindred, saying, is your father yet alive? Have you another brother? We told him according to the tenor of these words. Come, could we certainly know that he would say, bring your brother down? We didn't know what he was going to say. Judah said unto Israel, his father, send the lad with me. We will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and thou, also our little ones. I'll be sure to him, if my hand shall not requite him, if I bring him not unto thee, and set him before thee, then let me bear the blame forever. For except we had lingered, surely we had now been returned a second time. The father said unto them, if it must be so, now do this. Take of the best of the fruit and the land of your vessel, carry them the manna present, a little balm, a little honey, spices, myrrh, nuts, and almonds. Of course, I'm sure they were about to run out as well. And take double money in your hand, and the money that was brought again in the mouth of your sack, carry it again in your hand, for eventually it was an oversight. He said, I want you to take it, double it up, go back and pay it, and then take it. Maybe it was an oversight. Now I'm gonna quit right now, but I want to just read into that. Get in. I want you to study over in that, if you will, please, and look in there and find out what happened. They brought it back, they carried it back, and a lot of things is wonderful takes place and transpires. And I want you to study over, read it closely about some of the encounters and what went on with his brethren. And of course, when he seen his younger brother and how he done and things that happened there in his house. And how he sent back then, of course, for his dad, and sent the wagons from Pharaoh's wagons back down to load up all the household and brought them all back down in the land of Egypt. And then we'll read about that and get the rest of that. And probably, hopefully, maybe within the next week or two, we'll get down to the 50th chapter and get out of that, and hopefully before Christmas. And then we'll get in, maybe the Lord will ask Christmas, in the book of Exodus, and take up some wonderful reading over there in the book of Exodus itself. This is wonderful. And a lot of love story here. It's wonderful in my heart every time I read it.